So today we are looking at Dhammapada verses 288 and 289, which read as follows. Nasanti putta tanaya napita napi bandhava antakena dipanasa Nati nyatisu tanata. Etamattha vasanyatva pandito sila sambuto. Nibbana gamanang magang kipameva visodhaye. Which means, children are not a protection. Neither are parents nor anyone with any sort of bond. For one overtaken by the end maker, death, there is no protection among relatives. Knowing the importance of this matter, one who is wise, possessing a virtue, the path to Nibbana should quickly purify. So these verses were apparently taught also to Patachara. I say also because we already have a verse or verses dedicated to her. We've already talked about her story as well, so again we'll go over the story one more time. Patachara was the daughter of a rich man in Sawati, I think. And lived a sheltered life. Her parents kept her away from the world and set her up to be married to someone who they deemed appropriate, a man of suitable station and connection to the family. But Patachara had fallen in love with a servant man in the house, and over time had made a relationship with him. And when she found out that she was to be married off to someone who she didn't even know, she ran away with this man, the servant man, and went to live in a much less wealthy place, a hamlet or a hovel or some sort of simple dwelling, and lived peacefully there for some time. And as these things happened, eventually she became pregnant and wanted to return to her family, as was the custom. So the time when a woman became pregnant, she would go back to stay with her family and give birth in her parents' home. But her husband, of course, was against this, was wary of the idea, because he had stolen their daughter away and felt that they wouldn't be, or he wouldn't be, received well. So tried to dissuade her and kept putting it off and making excuses for why they shouldn't go. Until finally, one day when she was close to her time of labor, she set out on her own on the path back to Sawati. When her husband came home and found out that she had gone, he ran after her and arrived to meet up with, to to catch up with her, just as she was going into labor. So he helped her, and she gave birth right there at the side of the road. And then he convinced her to not continue on to her parents now that she was with she had a child to take care of, and they returned back to their home and lived together for another 2 years or so, until the young child was at an age of being able to walk, a toddler. At which point she became pregnant again, and again wanted to set out to stay with her parents. And again her husband made excuses and declined to agree to go with her. And eventually again, with her young toddler in tow, set off to her parents' home on her own. And again, she was very close to the time of giving birth. And again, her husband caught up with her, and again, caught up with her just as she was going into labor. So again, he did what he could to help her, but this time, there was a big storm. And so he rushed around trying to, as the rain began to pour down, he rushed around trying to collect whatever he could to make a shelter, branches, leaves, whatever, so that she could give birth comfortably. And as he was doing this, off in the forest, collecting branches and so on, he ran into a snake, a deadly poison, deadly venomous snake, got bitten and died immediately off in the jungle and the forest. Meanwhile, Patachara was squatting in the mud, gave birth, the rain pouring down, huddling with her infant child, did what she could to collect the second child and huddle together in the rain until the storm passed, at which point she picked them both up and cleaned them up, cleaned themselves up, and went off to find her husband. When she found her husband's body, she was of course devastated, and this time had nowhere, no home to return back to with her husband gone. So decided that the best thing for her to do was to continue on to her parents' home, crying and mourning the loss of her husband. So she took the two children on the way to Savatthi, got close to the city, and came to a river near the city, I guess. And we remember the story of the merchant and the river. After a storm, this river is very difficult to cross. And so she figured that the best way for her to cross was to leave the toddler by the side of the river and cross with the newborn baby clutched to her chest. Which she did, crossed the river, got to the other side of the river, and laid the newborn baby on the side of the bank of the river. And then turned around and waded back through the river to get the toddler, who was sitting, waiting patiently by the side of the, on the bank. She got halfway back across the river and turned around to just check on her baby as she was crossing, and was just in time to see a large bird of prey eyeing up the newborn baby, swoop down, pick it up, and fly off with it. Immediately she screamed and yelled, was completely devastated, completely overtaken by fear and shock, and yelled loudly to try and somehow get the bird to drop her child. Of course, the bird didn't heed her and flew off with the baby to parts unknown. But at the same time, the toddler on the other side of the river, here she is halfway in the river, so on the other side of the river, heard her mother yelling, making loud noises, heard his mother yelling and making loud noises, and thought she was calling him, stood up and walked into the river. Got a few feet into the river and was swept off of his feet and carried down the river to, again, parts unknown. To drown, I suppose. It's unbelievable, I guess, but Padachara was still able to continue on to Savatthi. At this point, what I mean by unbelievable, it's unbelievable she didn't go crazy then and there, or wasn't completely consumed by grief. Most certainly she was consumed by grief, but was still able to continue on her way back to her parents' home. Of course, having nothing else to do, no other refuge, completely overwhelmed by grief. So she plodded her way into the city, back to the area where her parents lived, and saw that their house was missing. In the place of their house, there was just a burning pile of ash or rubble, maybe, I can't remember. Rubble, maybe? Just rubble. And so she asked around what happened to this house? Where are the people who lived here? And someone said, one of the neighbors said, "Oh, don't ask about that family. In the storm last night, that house was reduced to rubble. And all the people, all the family was killed." So in the course of 24 hours, or in the course of her travel anyway, however long that was, she lost her husband, her two ch newborn children, young children, and her entire family, both of her parents. And so now she really did lose it. It was completely without any sort of refuge, any sort of protection or support. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. And became a crazy woman, became a crazy person. Someone who wandered through the streets half naked, weeping and wailing. Completely devastated with the mind, basically broken, you know. At this point, the mind just unable to function, unable to get past this overwhelming, crushing sense of loss and devastation. But the happy ending of the story, if such an ending is possible, is that she was in Savatthi and close to where the Buddha was living. And one day she wandered into the place where the Buddha was giving a talk on the Dhamma. And immediately the people tried to shoo her away. Here she is, half naked, the crazy old woman. But the Buddha had them call her in, bring her in. He forbade them to shoo her away and had them bring her to him. So they put a cloth around her body and covered her up and brought her to the Buddha. And the Buddha asked, "Why are you crying?" And to the best of her ability, she let him know what had happened. And the Buddha's reply was, "Oh, it's true. You have lost everything. You've lost the things most precious to you, things that people fear to lose the most, the things that people cry over the most. And the Buddha said, but Patachara, the tears that you have cried over parents and children and relatives and spouses, in all of the rounds of samsara, life after life after life, those tears, just the tears from your eyes, are more by far than all of the oceans, all of the water in all of the oceans on earth. Again and again and again you cry. Why do you stay unmindful? How can you be again and again carried away by this? What good is it? What benefit is it? And then he taught her the original verse in one of the earlier chapters. He also taught this verse to her, saying that these things are no refuge. And if you understand this, the weight of this and the meaning of this, what is the real true meaning of this inability to find happiness or be protected from suffering, the suffering that comes from loss? You need wisdom and ethics. And you need to find your way to free yourself from this attachment. And so that's the verse, these are the verses that he taught. So the story, one of the most famous stories in all of the Buddhist literature. Now you've heard it. Has several lessons, I think, specifically for people practicing Buddhist meditation. The first is calamity, on the topic of terrible things happening. Now we've talked about, of course, how calamity and loss is a danger for all of us and something that we shouldn't be blind to. This sort of danger can come to any one of us at any time, and we should be cognizant of that, never losing sight of that potential possibility. But also we've said that clearly for most people this doesn't happen. The odds are none of us are going to experience the complete and total devastation that Patachara experienced in this life. But then on the other hand, the odds are that we already have in one life or another, because statistically speaking, if we've been born and died countless times in countless eons, even in countless cycles of regeneration of the universe, even of the world and the universe, it must have happened to us at some time or another. But to be honest, that kind of reduces the impact. And reminds us, like as the Buddha said, that it's not something really to be upset about. This is just par for the course. Eventually, this is going to happen to all of us. And so the real lesson for us in this regard, I think, is to ask ourselves how we would fare if total and complete and utter devastation came to us, if we lost the things that were most important to us, our families, our loved ones. If in one day we were to lose all of them, how would we fare? It's a good exercise. It's a good way of assessing the quality of your mind, the independence of your mind, your ability to see to see in proper perspective the nature of all of the things in our lives. That holding on to anything is not only dangerous, it's also meaningless. That with the inevitability of death, that there's really no potential value or gain or ultimate meaning behind this, besides the pleasure and pain that comes from getting what we want and then not getting, losing what we like. And in the end, it's cycle after cycle, it just becomes meaningless. It certainly doesn't make us a happier person. Overall, it certainly doesn't bring us true peace or freedom from suffering. The second lesson, something of note, is the power of grief, the power of the trigger, the emotions that are triggered as a result of loss. And this is another real danger that we have to keep track of. When you lose something, when you gain something you don't want, or when you cultivate great addiction to anything, the emotions that arise blind us. So Patachara's sadness blinded her, made it impossible for her to even think clearly. Now, what I didn't say is, as a result of the Buddha's teaching, Patachara was able to begin to think clearly. And this is the other lesson from the story, is that while there is a great power to grief, it's the power to consume our minds and prevent us from being more mindful. On the other hand, mindfulness has the power, if employed, has the power, the great and magical almost power, to free us from sorrow, free us from grief, free us from pain and suffering. So as a result of the Buddha's teaching, Patachara was able to regain her senses and acknowledge, this is real. This, whatever you might say about it being unfair or unjust, wrong, bad, a much better thing to say about it is, it's true. It did happen. When and if such a thing happens to you, the only thing you can really say is, it happened. And that's a great attitude, and very much in line with the practice of mindfulness. It happened. This is happening. This happened. This will happen. That's all we can say about anything. If it's in the past, it happened. If it's in the future, it will happen. If it's in the present, it's happening. Once we start to say more, that's where the trouble comes. When we start to say, this shouldn't happen, I mean, it doesn't really have much weight or meaning. That shouldn't have happened. Well, what do you mean it happened? So as a result, Patachara was able to gain perspective and eventually became a bhikkhuni, ordained under the Buddha's teaching, and became an arahant. She became the most notable of all the Buddha's disciples in regards to the Vinaya, all of his female disciples anyway. I mean, one of the greatest in regards to the Vinaya, which is the code of conduct for monastics. She was one of the greats, one of the people who probably handed down the Vinaya, the Buddha's code of discipline that we share now today. So that's basically, those are the lessons from the story. In regards to the verse, let's just go through some of the words that are harder to understand. Bandhava means those who have any kind of bond. So the Buddha says children, or is it literally sons, but putta can be children. Children are not a refuge. Many people put their whole life, their whole identity, as we've said before, into their children, like with Kisa Gotami in the last story. Patachara was the same, most likely, became very much invested in the lives of her children, her child. I mean, other child she didn't have much time with, but having a child for 9 months in your womb certainly gives you a strong sense of attachment. But there's no refuge there. Well, putting aside Patachara, it's common for people to invest everything into their children, even their own hopes for the future. When I get old, my children will take care of me. True, absolutely pragmatic. I mean, your children take care of you, your parents take care of you. The Buddha said neither one of these is a refuge, a true protection. They can't protect us from death. And ultimately, if we invest too much into them, into worldly affairs in general, we lose sight of the bigger picture, more what's more important, and we fail. We neglect to do what is most important. I mean, a huge part of what is important for us here is how it reminds us of why we practice mindfulness. You know, asking ourselves how we would fare in the case of Patachara, and asking what we can do to better prepare for the future, or to just better be able to deal with the reality of samsara, and eventually to free ourselves from all of the many thorns and brambles in the jungle of samsara. Antakena, antaka means the end maker, which is just another name for death, because death puts an end to everything. Antaka. So the first verse, as others have, reminds us of the inevitability of death, and how there is no refuge from death, and how regardless of what great benefit comes from having strong relations, Bandhava means anyone with any kind of bond, could be our spouses or relatives of any kind. Anyone, no matter what we put into such relationships and how much we get out of those relationships, in the end, they too pass, they too fade away, and they don't constitute the essence of our strength and our true refuge. And the only true refuge is our own strength, our own power of mind, our own greatness of mind. And so this is what the second verse addresses. So someone who understands that worldly affairs are transient and can never really truly be a source for peace, happiness, freedom from suffering. They're unstable, they're unreliable, they're ephemeral, they pass. They end up being meaningless. We attach so much importance on family, for example. I mean, most people will tell you that there's no greater attachment than one's family. And they take pride in that, and are very much seeing that as a positive thing. But from the perspective of samsara, the rounds of samsara, it really becomes quite insignificant. As we said before, like 100 years is nothing. It's just a blink of the eye. And furthermore, how many families have we had? Really, the Buddha remarked that probably we've been family with every single individual on earth right now. None of them are more special than the others. It's not to say they're less special. I mean, it's a great reason for being friendly with everyone, remembering that we're all a family, and lifetime after lifetime, we just play musical chairs. And when we put attach so much importance on certain individuals, I mean, it's just a flies in the face of truth, of reality. So the second verse says, when you understand this, someone who is wise, pandita, and sila sammuta, one who is virtuous. So these two qualities, the Buddha points out, one who has these two qualities should purify the path to nibbana, is how he puts it. What does this mean? Normally we think of wisdom as the end of the path, which it is. True wisdom is the result of the path. I mean, it's what leads to letting go. You let go because you understand nothing is worth clinging to, and that's the last moment before the attainment of nibbana. So that really is the path itself. It's the real and true moment of path consciousness. But pandita has a little bit more of a connotation of worldly wisdom. It means sort of the preparatory wisdom, a person who is conventionally wise, a person who understands things like life is uncertain, our family, our relatives, our everything we hold on to is uncertain. We'll have to be separated from their all, from them all. The only thing that is truly certain is death, this sort of wisdom. And it's not something that you can intellectually convince yourself of. It means someone who has done the work, probably lifetime after lifetime, to prepare themselves and to be in the right frame of mind, really. Be in the right frame of mind to see the importance of the cultivation of mindfulness, the cultivation of spirituality, even just the cultivation of ethics. Because ethics are the true base ethics, where you have proper behavior of speech and body, where you have collected your mind to the point where you're able to focus. You notice the Buddha doesn't mention concentration. He says wisdom, ethics. The third training that he doesn't mention is concentration, but really, concentration is the what we normally associate with or refer to as the path. So all of our path of practice, when we practice mindfulness, this is the path of concentration. So before that, for someone who is going to prepare for that, first they need the wisdom to understand this is worth doing. This is definitely something that I should put my whole heart into and work to cultivate. And ethics to straighten the mind out, to keep the mind able to focus. A person who kills, steals, cheats, lies, takes drugs and alcohol, in no way is capable of ever focusing their mind and cultivating the concentration required to see clearly. So having these two, someone who has these two and is able to focus their mind to the point where they see the importance of it, should dedicate themselves to the cultivation of the path that leads to Nibbana, which is wisdom, the wisdom to see that nothing is worth clinging to, that clinging is just a cause of further suffering and stress, and thereby to let go, and with letting go to realize and experience Nibbana, the cessation of suffering. So, valuable teachings, not too difficult to understand. Again, I think the real lesson for us is in acknowledging the inevitability of loss and calamity, to ask ourselves whether we're ready for such calamity, and more importantly, to put in perspective all of the things that could possibly devastate us and realize that it's not worth it, and it's a wretched state to be so vulnerable for such meaningless things. Things that we take to be so important and so meaningful, the lesson is to see that for the most part they're not very meaningful at all. Gain that perspective and to free ourselves to focus on what's truly important, the cultivation of ethics, the cultivation of concentration, and ultimately the cultivation of wisdom, cultivation of the path that leads to Nibbana. So, a valuable story, a memorable story, certainly, and a valuable lesson about how, in the end, none of the things we cling to are truly going to meaningfully bring us true happiness. So, that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you all for listening.